We're talking to Steven Segal. I just wanted to ask you a few questions about your background. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Detroit, grew up in Lansing, Michigan. I never mention that because nobody's ever heard of it, but it's right out. Actually, I was born in Lansing, but I usually say Detroit because nobody's ever heard of Lansing. Mm-hmm. And I grew up there in Michigan for a while. Came to California when I was probably around 10. And lived in a place called Fullerton in California for several years. And after I left high school, I went into Asia and stayed there from that time until about 85 or so, at which time I came back to the United States and settled down in Los Angeles.
And when did you first decide you wanted to be a film actor producer?
I still haven't decided. That is never really a conscious decision that I made, or never was a conscious decision that I've made. I had loved writing, and writing was something that I really wanted to do. And to me, I felt that the most important element, first of all, was a good story. And I had lots of good stories from my running around in Asia and just lots of things that I had done and been a part of, and started writing them down and wanted very much to be able to make movies as a writer and producer eventually. And a lot of people just kept saying, you know, we think maybe you might be better off in front of the camera. You know, we like the stuff that you're writing, but we'd like you to try this and try that and maybe do a screen test. And eventually I did a screen test, and apparently they liked it, and they asked me to do Above the Law.
Hmm. I remember with Errol Flynn, they had a similar situation where he was projected into a big movie right away, and they ended up reshooting part of it. Were you comfortable right away in front of the camera, or did it take you a little while to adjust to it?
I was completely and absolutely comfortable.
What were you doing just before you were making films?
I was teaching the martial arts.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the Orient?
Mm-hmm.
And where did you really learn the martial arts?
I learned them all over the world, but started out in America and then started learning them in Japan, primarily Japan.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that you had a need for that when you were a kid?
More than a need, it's a strange thing with me in the sense that I'd seen the martial arts done by a great master in my early youth. And just in seeing it, I knew that that was something that I was meant to do. At an early age, you know, some children just know, they have a feeling for what's in store for them in their life. And that strong feeling led me to make that a very big part of my life.
And do you feel it's kind of an art in itself?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It is an art.
Where have you been living recently? What area?
We live between New York. I also spent a lot of time in my younger days in and out of New York, and we have a lot of family there. So we live in New York part of the time, Los Angeles part of the time, and Santa Barbara part of the time.
Mm-hmm. And where would you like to live in the future?
I hadn't really thought about it. We also have a ranch in Mendocino. You know, the crazier the world gets, the more you want to get away. We don't really like the craziness of the big cities, the smog and the cars and the pollution and the crime and the drugs. And we're not crazy about any of that stuff, so I seem to find myself constantly contemplating going farther and farther away from all of that. And we're fairly isolated up in Santa Barbara. As long as we can have a big ranch where we have our privacy, I guess we're okay.
Mm-hmm. And what are some parts of the world that you find most interesting?
Well, I love Africa. I love the culture and the look, and I just find it very, very fascinating and interesting. And I would say that African music is probably my favorite music in the world. I love so much of the world. I love Italy and have a strong connection with Italy. I mean, I love Europe in general. There are many parts of the world that I enjoy very much. And interestingly enough, having lived in Asia for half of my life, one would think that I love all of Asia because I live there, but Some of Asia I didn't really care for. I liked Japan quite a bit. But. Mm-hmm.
And would you like to see your children be exposed to all those different cultures as well?
I don't think it can hurt. I think it can only help. I think the more exposure one gets to different cultures, the more diversified their thought process can be in dealing with life and art in general.
I've really enjoyed your films immensely. How do you maintain the tight, action-packed quality that never lets up throughout?
Well, I think the key in being able to do that is trying to, and I'm not saying that I've succeeded, but trying to come up with a character that people care about and put that character in a dilemma where he's a reluctant hero. It's not somebody who wants to be violent or wants to step up and hurt people, but somebody who really has values and morals and ethics and some form of thought process that can equivalent religion mm-hmm. in one way or another. And put that hero in a situation where he has to step up, possibly at his own sacrifice, to help those who are weak and needy or righteous or whatever. And I think once you have that classic formula, you make sure that the bad guy is bad enough. And when I say bad enough, certainly I don't mean tough as much as I mean smart, you know, because I think that the brain is the most dangerous weapon. And once you pretty much get all of those elements into the equation, I think then it's just a problem of pace. And what you need to do is just work real hard on making sure that there's a balance and mixture of the thought process going on between the hero and the villain, and the story being able to naturally evolve in their relationships.
Mm-hmm. Have you sat in on the editing sessions to make sure the pace is to your liking?
Oh, always. In mm-hmm. fact, on Out for Justice, I cut every frame of that picture. You know, I cut that myself.
Really works well. Our listeners have just heard the marvelous music from David Michael Frank. How would you describe his musical style and what attracted you to him?
It's real tough for me to categorize David, because I think that in categorizing him, you're going to say, well, he's really best at classical or he's really best at jazz. I think David, the thing that's appealing to me about him is that he has a strange ability to be able to do some of the heppest, modern, hard-hitting music that there is, and at the same time do something that would make you think that it's Williams or somebody like that. I mean, he can do wonderful orchestral stuff. He can do wonderful jazz. He can do great rock. Mm-hmm. And the thing I enjoy about working with David is that he seems to respect me as somebody with a musical background and has allowed me to be a big part of the process of picking the musicians that I want and arranging the music in such a way that I'm happy with it and stuff like that.
What are some future projects that you're planning now?
We're starting something called Dreadnought, which is a military project. Takes place primarily on a battleship. And that ought to be challenging because the music will be unlike anything we've ever done. And I have some exciting pieces in the future, like this Man of Honor, mm-hmm. which is a mafia piece. And those kind of dissident yet melodic melodies that come forward, like in The Godfather, are very fun to create and deal with. And I just think it's fun to be able to do different kinds of music from different cultures. Like in Marked for Death, I wanted to bring in African and reggae together. And even though I was inhibited in that process by who we hired to compose it, the time will come again for me to be able to get involved in some of the mediums of music that I love the most.
Mm-hmm. I was really excited when I first heard the cassette of this music. It really stands on its own as well as working great with a picture. So that's a true testament to David's talent.
I agree.
What do you usually do for recreation when you're not filming?
I ride horses. We have a lot of horses at the ranch. I shoot guns. You know, I'm an avid shooter. I like shooting. I teach Aikido. I practice Aikido. I'm training a few people in boxing and Tai Chi and stuff like that. And I write.
Mm-hmm.
Spend time with the kids.
And what are some other goals and accomplishments that you have set for the future?
Well, I'd like to be able to make a movie that I think is about something that everybody cares about. I'm particularly concerned about the environment. It's one of the most important issues in my life. I'm very concerned about AIDS and all the people out there that are stricken with this disease that I think is probably not something that came from the green monkey, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written about all of these things, and I hope to be able to someday make movies about these subjects that are controversial, not because they're controversial, but because people really care about these things and I think deserve to be able to see these things in the media. I don't think everybody should be afraid of them all the time.
Did you ever work for any law enforcement agencies?
No.
No. Can you tell us about recalling any favorite moments during the making of one of your films?
Gosh, I mean, to me, every moment is wonderful in these films. There are so many. I loved making the bar scene in Out for Justice. I enjoyed that very much. I enjoyed on the spot writing. I wrote the scene where I'm talking about when I'm a child and my uncle is taking me to the movies in Out for Justice. And he sees somebody stealing candy in the candy store. I wrote that scene on the spot because we needed something like that. And I can remember writing it and doing it. For me, that was a kind of a touching scene. I like those kind of out-of-character things.
So you do a little improvising with every film. And which part of the production process of your films do you like the most?
I like writing the most. I like acting the least.
Mm-hmm.
And I like producing. I like editing. I like editing a lot.
Would you like to direct also, ultimately?
Warner Brothers has certainly given me that opportunity, and I will be directing.
And do you find that when you have success, you start to get carte blanche, or is it still hard to launch certain ideas that you have?
Well, it's very hard still. I mean, I wanted to make Rainbow Warrior, which is an ecological piece that was turned down.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make Pandora, which is a piece on AIDS, which was turned down. So I don't think there's any star in the business that can just do what he wants, particularly in this day and age when the economy is so horrific and there are very few pictures getting made.
So they don't want to take any gambles on things like that. They're interested in commerciality primarily, right?
I think that they don't want to take any chances at all right now.
Do any stars like yourself ever invest in paying for projects like that themselves?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. You've played some really strong independent characters. Who are some of your real life heroes?
Mother Teresa. Or is it Sister Teresa? I think that my heroes are generally not people in the movie business or anything like that, but people who have stood up and done something for mankind. I would be more apt to have a hero that won a Nobel Peace Prize than I would somebody who stopped a bank robbery, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Do you have any heroes in film, though? Some directors or actors? Or?
Well, there are plenty of actors and directors that I admire tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Any that you'd like to work with? Maybe this will get to them.
Well, I mean, I'm a very big fan of John McTiernan, of Jim Cameron, of Sidney Lumet, of Sidney Pollack, Dick Donner. These are all directors that I'm a very big fan of. And there are innumerous actors that I'm very, very impressed with.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, I'd like you to finish this sentence for me. I am most happy when?
I would say on a quiet day with my family up at the ranch.
Okay. Do you have any advice to aspiring filmmakers or martial artists?
Well, I would say to the martial artists, keep it up. You're in the right spot. To the aspiring film stars, I would say you might want to think about another career. This one is it's a tough career. It's based on rejection and deceit and, you know, politics. And it's a very, very difficult business. You know, everybody thinks that it's a glamorous, wonderful, happy life. But it's surrounded and shrouded in a lot of deception. And, you know, the perfect example for me is you might find somebody that would go up to read for a role and their performance is absolutely the best there is. Their look is absolutely perfect. They are the role. Mm-hmm. And there are 352 billion reasons why that person will not get hired.
Hmm.
It may be, you know, that the director wants to hire his girlfriend. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
But in this business, you do not get hired for a role because you're right for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how important the politics are. It's a rough business.
But as your box office clout increases, you can insist upon things that you want, right?
Absolutely.
Would you be interested in opening your own restaurant or nightclub like a few other stars have done?
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't mind having a small Italian restaurant that I could cook in once in a while.
How did you happen to get involved with Dave and Michael Frank?
Well, I think probably, as I said to you earlier, he's somebody that I found had a really wonderful understanding of modern music and modern musicians, and could really, really write some stuff that I thought was really hot and really hip, and at the same time really understood instruments and orchestral stuff in films. And so in that instance, I felt that he was perfect for me.
I understand you really get heavily involved in the music. You want to talk about that?
Well, I mean, I'm lucky enough to be in a situation where I'm working with people who want my input musically. And I started playing music when I was around 10 years old, started out on the drums, and then went into guitar and started writing and bass and stuff like that. So I write a little bit and I have an idea of what I want. And with David, we're a good team in the sense that I'll tell him what I want, he'll tell me what he wants, and we'll both show each other. And usually, you know, the proof is in the pudding. I always spot with David. I come down to the recording session. Sometimes I play an instrument. You know, I work with the musicians. Usually I will pick the musicians and I keep most of the same musicians. Of course, David and I, interestingly enough, agree on all of the people that we are crazy about. You know, rhythm section, we use Vinnie Kelly and John Robbins. You know, we call him JR. We use Neil Stupenhaus on bass a lot. Guitars, Michael Thompson's, George Deering. Percussion, Mike Fisher, Efren Toro, Luis Conti. Keyboards, people like Randy Kerber, Alan Pasquale. We use Michael Boddicker a lot. And Iwi, Joel Ruskin and Judd Miller. Engineer, I like Mick Gazowski. And people like that.
Yeah, I've worked with a lot of those people. Like George Deering plays a lot on Star Trek.
He's a great, great guitar player.
Do you have any interesting anecdotes concerning the music?
Well, I think the most exciting time for all of us was when David wrote The Car Chase and Above the Law. And the Iwi break in that thing was just, I mean, unbelievable. I think Hiram Bullock played guitar on that. And my God, that to me to this day is still the hottest little piece of music I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, this album really has some blazing guitars on it.
Yeah.
What is your favorite instrument to play?
I think my favorite instrument to play is bass, but I play the drums and maybe even guitar better than I play bass. But
did you appear in public where you were playing in bands or anything?
Well, the last time I appeared public was I sat in with Jimmy Cliff when he came to America. I think it was the Greek Theater, you know, and I played kungas and percussions with him and sang with him.
Wonderful. And I noticed that you try to inject a lot of different flavoring into your music of your films. What are some sources?
Well, I mean, I love culture, you know, and I think that the music that comes up from every culture, whether it's Spanish or Peruvian or South American or African or Irish or whatever, like probably, believe it or not, my two favorite ethnic kinds of music would be African and Irish or Gaelic. Mm-hmm. Those are my two favorites. And whenever you can write a movie that has to do with those ethnic backgrounds and you can bring that music up, to me, there's no greater thrill than that.
And how were you exposed to those genres originally?
Just by researching and playing and learning and writing and reading.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of your success comes from your real academic drive.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. I've been dying to ask you this question, and it's kind of frivolous, but have you noticed the way so many people wear their hair like you do now? You must get a kick out of that.
Well, interestingly enough, many, many people have said, geez, you know, the Steven Seagal brought the ponytail in, and so many people have a ponytail now. Well, I just cut my ponytail off for this military movie, so we'll be interested to see if everybody starts cutting their ponytail off. Who knows?
I've always noticed that the real artists are always one step ahead of everyone, like David Bowie or whoever. Right when everyone's following what they did and you run into them, they're always one or two steps ahead of what they created.
I've noticed that too, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, it certainly has been a pleasure speaking with you. And
thank you very much.
It's a wonderful accomplishment, your career and the record and the movies. We look forward to a lot more great stuff.
Great, thank you.